This is the Big Stories Podcast, where we tell the amazing and inspiring stories from across the Big 12 Conference.
Welcome back to Big Stories. I'm your host, Cleon Wall. The Big 12 continues to entertain with some of the most surprising teams in the country. So let's dive in.
The Big Stories Top 5 Teams.
This is a reminder, these are our top 5 teams, meaning producer Chase Davidson and myself. And if we overlap on any team, we have to choose a new one. I believe I get to go first this week. Is that right, Chase?
Yes.
My number 5 team this week is Texas Tech. What a game by the defense and what a game by the offense after Will Hammond went out with an injury. He's their quarterback, or at least their number 2 quarterback who went out with an injury. Mitch Griffiths, their number 3 guy, comes in, holds down the fort, and they win comfortably over 42-0. The only reason I don't have them ranked higher is because they played Oklahoma State. So I expected them to win this game, no matter who was playing quarterback in this game, but still fairly impressive that they were able to do it 42-0 with their third string quarterback going quite a bit of the way in this game.
Right, that is very impressive. I actually did not put Texas Tech at my 5. I will not have them in my top 5 today.
Interesting.
Yeah, mainly because they play. I feel like there's 5 other better teams that played this week. And again, a shutout is very impressive. But for my number 5, I went with Cincinnati.
Interesting.
That offense from Cincinnati deserves more respect. I was not giving them much respect after their first couple games. I am now giving them much respect. 265 yards on the ground. And that's one of the things Cincinnati's been doing the best. This is why this team is so solid. They win at the line of scrimmage, and their rushing attack is so balanced. They beat Baylor at home pretty handily. Baylor did kind of have a few points late, but Cincinnati dominated the game, looked good as ever, and Baylor is probably one of the better teams they've played thus far. So very impressive win from Cincinnati.
Right, your number 4 team.
Number 4, I've got Kansas State. The Sunflower Showdown champs again keeps their big brother status against Kansas. 4 touchdowns from Avery Johnson. 42-17 victory. Kansas State is now 4-4 after starting 1-3. They have scored 34 points or more in their last 4 games. They are playing very well. I would not be surprised if they randomly take down a contender. They're not contending, but they could very well pull off a surprise win versus a contender.
So what you're saying is Texas Tech.
That's who they're hosting this next week. I'm just saying.
Okay,
I wouldn't be that surprised.
Kansas State was the team I left out. They were my backup. My number 4 is Cincinnati. The only reason I am ranked here instead of number 5 is because they played a tougher opponent. Baylor can score, and yet they held the Bears to 20 points and only 266 total yards. Cincinnati can run the ball, and they ran all over Baylor and scoring 41 points. You know, I could have put them at number 3, too, but I like having them right here. My number 3 team is Houston. I think Cincinnati is a better team than Houston, but I think Houston had the more impressive win. They were ahead 24-0 at Arizona State, and that was with Sam Levitt playing most of that game. Granted, they did hold on to beat ASU. ASU did score 16 points after they went up 24-0. I've just been impressed with how Houston has won these games. That's why I have them at number 3 this week.
Yeah, at number 3, I have Utah. Utah played amazing. Now, granted, they played Colorado, who has not looked the greatest, beat Iowa State, but Colorado has struggled in conference. They channeled that rivalry loss last week back into that absolute pounding of Colorado. 422 yards on the ground. 422 yards on the ground. Like, that is actually unheard of, especially against another Power 5 opponent. I don't care how bad Colorado is. That's hard to do against anyone with a talent pool in Power 4 football. At number 2, I have Houston. Yes, Houston is for real, and I think after this week, I really think Houston is for real because, my goodness, Connor Wigman is the key to that team's success. Now, the defense did play very well. You are right. But 200 yards to the air, and what's even more impressive, he had 111 on the ground.
Yeah.
Houston had control of the game from the very start. Obviously, they held off a late run by Arizona State, but Houston is still very much in the Big 12 title race, just that one loss to Texas Tech.
So we're going to have a problem here. I'm trying to decide if I want to bail you out, Chase, or if I want to make you squirm. Okay, so my number 2 team, I think, is, you now know, is going to be Utah. Here's the reason why. I have a few reasons why. Now, first of all, I should say, I could have put Houston here at number 2 because that was an impressive win. It was more impressive for Houston to win at Arizona State than it was for Utah to win at home over Colorado. But here's why I have Utah number 2. Number one, they got over the rivalry hangover fairly easy. Number two, they hung 53 points on Colorado, 43 of those points in the first half. And number three, they did it with a backup quarterback. I think that's impressive that they were able to do that. All those things, that they were able to hang a lot of points on a team, that they were able to overcome their rivalry hangover, and they did it with a backup quarterback. I think that's very impressive. So that should tell you that Chase and I have the same number one. But I want to know what Chase is going to do with his number one spot now. Maybe he'll have to give it to Texas Tech now that he didn't put it in there, because my number one team, and he has to choose a different team. My number one team is BYU. And the reason why I picked BYU again, number one, got over the rivalry hangover, though it seemed it didn't really happen until about the second quarter or latter part of the second quarter. Second, they were down 14 without their starting running back in LJ Martin, and they came back to win by 14. That says a lot about your freshman quarterback right there. And they did it in Ames. That would be my number three thing, is that they actually went to Ames and they won that game. That's impressive. That's why BYU this week is my number one team. So, Chase, what are you going to do? Who's your number one team going to be? Because it can't be BYU.
So my number one team is Texas Tech. they won at Oklahoma State. Beat Oklahoma State at home, 42-0. Great shutout. My honorable mention team is BYU in that case. I will say I do need to talk about, I think BYU, their greatest asset is their team chemistry. They play complementary football, and that is what wins them these games. There's nothing on the stat sheet that says, wow, BYU is a top 10 team because they do this the best. Nope. It's pretty much just complimentary football. And I was to actually say, for my number one team, technically Texas Tech also does the same thing. I love what Texas Tech does on both sides of the ball. Those teams play each other in 2 weeks. That is an exciting game, which might get College Game Day. The Big 12 also hosts College Game Day this week with Cincinnati, Utah. Good national respect for the conference.
The last thing I'd say about that BYU game is, I would give credit to just the offense, just in general. And the reason why I say that is, you have a freshman quarterback in Bear Bachmeier. He's basically going to be told, guess what? Your number one running option is not available. Your number two running option, Siona Moa, is not available either. So we're going to pass the ball, because we know we've got two good wide receivers out there. Actually, you've got more than that. Carson Ryan's a good tight end. Mm-hmm. You've got more than that. But we're basically going to throw the ball because we know it's not going to be effective running the ball unless it's you running the ball. That's what they did, and they were able to come back from 14 down to win by 14. So that's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, keep in mind, when they lost their starting running back, they're down 24-10 at this point.
Yeah.
It was really bad. It wasn't like they had come back and then lost LJ Martin. No, they were down 24-10 in a sold-out crowd in Ames and found a way to win without their starting two running backs.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious why BYU, I think. I know BYU was your number one team. I think it's pretty obvious why BYU was the top team this week. BYU on a bye this next week, so we can't choose them next week, folks. It'll be interesting to see who we choose. Chase, thanks a lot.
The big stories, five biggest storylines.
Number five.
Where do we go from here? Part one. This category is for the bottom three teams in the Big 12. Colorado, where do you go from here after giving up 43 first-half points in a 53-7 loss at Utah? I'd say don't go back and watch the video of that game. It's not going to help you. You probably should learn how to tackle better. It may not have helped them win against Utah, but you never know. Maybe at least it would have made it closer. I think the biggest thing they need to learn from this is how to come off a bye week better. They had 2 weeks to prepare for Utah and give up 43 first-half points. Yikes. Okay, Oklahoma State, where do you go from here after your seventh straight loss? Well, maybe you need to find some semblance of an offensive game. Their highest scoring output in conference was 27 points against Baylor in the first game of the conference season. Since then, the Cowboys have scored 13, 17, 17, and 0 this past weekend against Texas Tech. Oklahoma State also needs to find something on defense. Opponents have scored over 40 points against them so far in conference. I'm talking every team except one, and that was Houston, who only scored 39 points. And then the last thing is, these guys need to find some pride in the last few games of the conference season. Whether that's playing for a scholarship offer from OSU or somewhere else, the new coach for Oklahoma State is probably going to clean house, so just go out, put some good game tape together, and hope you find a scholarship somewhere. All right, let's move on to West Virginia. The Mountaineers are still winless in conference, but Where do you go from here after a competitive game against TCU and number 22 Houston is on the horizon? Producer Chase Davidson talked about it with Country Roads Confidential podcast host Mike Casaza.
Mike, despite the challenges this season, what are some bright spots or areas of improvement you've noticed on the team?
Well, this won't take long. they have probably been forced into focusing on one quarterback here. They've had a number of injuries to three different starters who were in front of Scotty Fox. And yet Scotty Fox, the true freshman, he's been the best to perform so far. And I would imagine he's the starter as long as he's healthy from here on out. Coming off a 300-yard passing game, school record for yards by a true freshman. He's the first true freshman to start a game in like 75 years. So it's a unique thing. It's something you can look at and say, all right, it's not great. It should get better. And now he's got a chance to start, you know, the final six games of the regular season. And the best possible outcome for a Rich Rodriguez team early in his time, never mind in a first season that's really going nowhere, is to come out of it saying, we have a quarterback going forward. If they can say that, then you could feel a little bit better about, you know, 2-10, 3-9, 4-8, whatever this ends up being. Still not great. It's not a long list, but the fact that by sheer misfortune, they might have found their quarterback, that's probably one thing. It's a little bit better now. They actually scored and drove the ball a little bit against a good TCU team. Didn't win. Five straight losses, six overall, lost to a MAC team. Again, the negatives far outweigh the positives right now, but that would be the big one.
What does success look like for this team the rest of the season, even if it doesn't show up in the win column?
You know, you probably can't notice it. They need to wake up their donors. They need to get more money in the account so that when they hit the offseason, they can retain players. It's going to be hard to retain their top-level poachable talent. I'm not sure how much there is, but naturally, you're going to have buzzards hovering above this and trying to pick out the best players because they want to change a senior and to be more successful. They're going to have to keep their best and most desirable parts. They're going to have to make sure they win some recruiting battles at the high school level to keep their recruiting class together. They're going to have to hit the portal hard, probably at quarterback, definitely on the offensive line, definitely on the defensive line. They're going to have to spend money. And like a lot of teams in their situation, they don't have a lot to spread around to as many parts as they need to. But if you look at what teams have done just overnight by raising money, by funding their football program, it can happen. It's probably going to have to happen with their administration too. They're probably going to have to get some help from the actual campus. They're going to have to probably try to get some government involvement. They've talked here about, you know, a sales tax or a slice of revenue that comes from hospitality during home game weekends, from sports betting, so on and so forth. They're going to have to be creative to find some ways there. That's off the field. That'll affect on the field if it actually works. And then they're going to have to be serious about some of their coaching staff decisions. They have 20-something assistant coaches. All but one of them is on a one-year contract. That's their defensive coordinator. He's on a three-year contract. He's not going anywhere unless someone comes and pays him a lot of money to go somewhere else. But his defense hasn't been that good this year. They need to look at their offensive line coach. They need to look at their receivers coach. They need to look, I mean, just up and down the board. Do you want to bring these guys back? Because again, all of them are up for renewal. Or do you go out and upgrade if you can, or get someone you're more familiar with, or get someone who's a really good recruiter or who has contacts in the transfer portal? Those are decisions. So can they get those decisions made? Can they get that money committed in the completion of the regular season here? So four games. So when the regular season does end, they can say this was not all for naught. We went out, we pointed out our flaws, we pointed out our needs, and now that the portal is opening soon, now that we could, for lack of a better phrase, tamper legally, we can actually mobilize and get our plan on the ground so it's ready to go when the doors open. I think that would be a good thing for them. Because right now, it's not going to be a team that makes a bowl game. It's not going to be a team that has a winning record. I don't know how you could feel really good and say that much was a success, apart from the quarterback situation.
What do you think fans should understand about the challenges of a coaching transition, especially in like today's college football landscape? It has changed.
I mean, they're fairly familiar. I mean, they've had four basketball coaches in 4 years here.
Yes.
They've had, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's three football coaches in 7 years. Neil Brown was here for six. He followed Dana Holgerson, who was here for eight. And then this is Rich Rodriguez's first year. So you'd like to be more stable than that, certainly in basketball, but definitely, you know, in football, because it pays so many bills and it's just responsible for so much of your success in your athletic department and probably your university as a whole. There's a larger problem and conversation here about enrollment for a school that's had financial issues for a while, just major debt it's trying to address. And, you know, it's maybe it's not a straight line, but you can draw a line from your enrollment to how successful your football and basketball teams are. Look at the records. Hasn't worked. So I think what people have to understand is that they're going to ask more from fans. They're going to make this very industrial, very corporate, with naming rights on buildings, with names on courts, with sponsored this, with anything that can have a logo on it or can have a corporate name on it to help you get some money. Because you're right, money's a big thing. And they talked about it here. The head coach of the football team says, I'd like to have $10 million. So would I, Chase. Right?
Yeah.
Where am I getting that from, right? I'm going to have to go out and rob a bank or do something a little bit above and beyond. So, you know, there's going to be a culture change here because, yeah, it's still a Jimmy and Joe's and X and O's game, but it's also a dollar sign game. It's also a red and black number game right now, too. It's very different, and it's all because it's happened so fast. West Virginia was really behind the ball in the NIL era. They fired their athletic director in part because of that. Neil Brown really struggled because of that. Lost some really good players the first year of the NIL era because they weren't ready for that. So I think this is a place that understands that there is some tumultuous times when you have coaching changes. They've witnessed that. They also understand that you have to be aggressive and assertive to make changes, to make sure that you are not behind the ball. You're not doing in 2 or 3 years what everybody does in 1 year. So I think that they would be open to some of the changes I was talking about, to some of the in-your-face advertising, sponsorship, corporate involvement that is probably not too far away from here.
Thank you so much for coming up on the show today, Mike. It's a pleasure to have you, and thank you for talking about West Virginia sports. We wanted to highlight you guys. Obviously, haven't had much to highlight as far as football goes, but West Virginia is still obviously a valuable member of the Big 12 and, you know, hoping for better next year.
Thanks, Chase. I enjoyed this.
Number four, where do you go from here? Part two. This is for the teams ranked 9 through 11 in the Big 12 standings. Kansas, Baylor, and Iowa State are all coming off their third loss in conference. Each probably had high hopes of being in the top half of the conference just over halfway through the conference season. So where do the Jayhawks go from here? Well, it'd be nice if they got some offensive line help, but they're not going to get it. So they probably need to rejigger their offense a little bit so that quarterback Jalen Daniels isn't always running for his life. The good news is they play Oklahoma State next. The bad news, they finish the season hosting the University of Utah, and Utah has a good defensive line. Okay, so where do the Baylor Bears go from here? They need to find better defenders or a better defense. Since they are probably not going to find better defenders, they've got to find a way to slow teams down. At the very least, they've given up 34, 42, and 41 points in their last three games, and one of those was a win. Maybe creating turnovers is a key. That's what BYU has been doing. That's how they've been able to stay in games or get ahead in games, is that they create turnovers. So if they don't find a way to slow teams down, I don't know if they're going to win a lot in their last four games. It includes games against Utah and Houston. The good thing about that is they get to host both of those games. Where do the Iowa State Cyclones go from here? Well, they just lost to BYU, and now they get ready to host an ASU team who could be asking the same question of where do they now go from here? But we're focused on the Cyclones, and right now we're going to talk with radio play-by-play voice and SciCast podcast host John Walters. John, before the 2025 season started, I don't think anyone expected to see Iowa State in the bottom half of the standings with four games left to go in the season and also trying to snap a three-game losing streak. Is there a feeling of disbelief in Ames right now?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily a feeling of disbelief, but obviously it's frustrating when you have a three-game losing streak and you felt like you had a chance in each of those three games. I think Iowa State, if you looked at the tape of each of the three games, you'd say 75 to 80% of the snaps, they've done some really, really good things that you'd be pleased with as a coaching staff. But when they make an error, it seems to get compounded. And to the credit of their opponents, especially the BYU this past weekend, they took advantage. Every time Iowa State made a mistake, they took full advantage of that. And that's what great teams do. So it is a tough stretch right now for Iowa State, but they have great leadership in that locker room. I don't think that's going to change. And I expect them to bounce back with a really good effort this Saturday. They don't know any other way other than to get back to the drawing board and keep working. They have to limit some of their mistakes, and they've made more mistakes than we're accustomed to. But Matt Campbell has always said through the years that Iowa State teams are going to have to live in the margins and win the little detail things in order to win football games, because they're not going to out-recruit or out-NIL a lot of other schools. And so they have to do the little things well. And in this three-game losing streak, they haven't done the little things well. Just like in their 5-game winning streak to open the season, they did the little things well. So that's the challenge going forward.
Iowa State starting cornerbacks go down right before the losing streak, and the defense has suffered since then. In two of those losses, they've given up over 30 points a game. Where's the Cyclones' defense right now?
Well, the defense does have some injuries for sure. Jeremiah Cooper and Jontez Williams were each preseason All Big 12 selections. They're each out for the season with ACL injuries. Dominique Orange has been in and out of the lineup. He was Iowa State's third preseason All Big 12 selection. So all three of the guys that were picked by the league to be some of the best players in the league have been at best in and out of the lineup, and at worst out for the season. So the guys that have stepped in have done a pretty good job, but obviously there's a drop off. You're talking about All Big 12 players. And so the defense, I think, has struggled a little bit at times this year to slow the run game. Certainly that was the case against Cincinnati. I think they've done much better in that category in the last couple of weeks, particularly against a BYU rush attack that was averaging 230 rushing yards a game. And if you would have told me, you know, that BYU would be held to just over 100 yards rushing, that Iowa State would outrush them with their running backs by over 100 yards. Obviously, L.J. Martin's injury was a huge part of that, but for BYU. But if you would have told me Iowa State would have outrushed them almost 2-1, I would have said, well, there's no way Iowa State loses that football game. But the flip side of it is the 4-0 turnover thing. And I think for Iowa State defensively, they need to start creating some turnovers. They've only created one turnover in the last three games, and I think that's something that they need to do. If you lose the turnover margin 4-0, you're not beating anybody, especially a really good team like BYU. And, you know, the 30 points a game gets a little skewed. Obviously, there was a pick six by BYU in that game that contributed to the 41 points on the board. But, hey, it is a struggle right now. In offense to be efficient, defense to be efficient, special teams to be efficient. As I said earlier, a lot of good plays, but just not enough of them strung together.
The Cyclones were running all over BYU in the first half, and Rocco Beck struggled with some interceptions in the second half. It's very simplistic of me to say that maybe the Cyclones need to run the ball more, but do they need to run the ball more? Again, it feels very simplistic since Rocco is a really good QB and had some amazing passes in that game against the Cougars.
It is hard to run the football when you get behind. I think the tendency is to start throwing the football as you're trying to make a comeback in the closing minutes. Iowa State was clearly at their best in that game when they were able to mix the run with the pass. I thought Rocco got off to a great start in that game. Not sure what he saw on the throw that was intercepted by Lotui. That was a poor play by him, I assume, although maybe it was some miscommunication with the receiver. And then, you know, the pick six, I think it was just telegraphed a little bit, and a great job by Satuala to get in front of that pass to Gabe Burkel and turn it into a pick six. Obviously, the last interception is a throwaway because the game's over. He's just trying to make it a throw down to the end zone. I don't really count that one against him. But Rocco Beck is an excellent quarterback. He has had a very good season, and he's a great leader on this football team. And I think there's not one player on Iowa State's offense or defense or special teams for that matter that feels anything but confidence in having Rocco Beck as their quarterback. They love him, and he is a guy that maybe puts a little bit too much on his shoulders, takes a little bit too much of the blame, as good leaders do, but I think he's at his best when he kind of cuts it loose and just plays. And early in that game, boy, that's exactly what he was doing. He was making great throws. He was moving around well in the pocket. BYU got more pressure on him as the game went on. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier, that Iowa State became more predictable because they got behind. And when you get behind and you become one-dimensional, it's a lot easier for defenses to pin their ears back and come after the quarterback. And that's what happened on Saturday.
Arizona State is the next best game to get back on track for the Cyclones. Iowa State is at home, and the Sun Devils are coming off a loss at home to Houston. What's Matt Campbell going to do to get his team headed in the right direction this week?
Well, I don't think Matt will reinvent the wheel in any way as far as trying to get ready for Arizona State. They have a very good football team. Obviously, they're dealing with some injuries and some adversity as well, just like Iowa State is. But this is a rematch of the last year's Big 12 championship game. I just think the Big 12 in general is just such a wide open race, and there's so many good teams, just like there were a year ago. You know, four teams tied for the conference championship a year ago. Iowa State and Arizona State, by the nature of the tiebreakers, were the two teams that got into the championship game. But this year, there's, you know, seven or eight teams again this year that felt like they had a great chance to win the conference championship. So it is a wide open race. Obviously, Iowa State's been on the wrong side of the ledger in the last three, and they're probably out of the race now as far as making it back to the championship game. And Arizona State is right on that edge right now and trying to play for their lives. But this should be a really good game. I think it's two really good football teams. I love Arizona State's talent. I know they lost Scadaboo, and obviously with Tyson being injured recently, that affects them as well. But, man, they have a lot of really good players returning from last year's team. And I don't think Matt will do anything dramatically different than what he's done in terms of game preparation. He's a great coach. His system has worked for, you know, 15 years as a head coach, and I don't think he'll try to reinvent himself this week. But obviously they'll try to clean up some of the detail things. I thought they got better as far as not committing as many penalties. I thought they got better at running the football. I mean, their run offense is really good right now, and their offensive line is playing the best it's played all season. So it's not like they're light years away from being good and having a chance to win a football game. They just have to clean up some of the stuff that they're doing and get better at the little minor things. And if they can do that, they'll have a great chance to beat Arizona State on Saturday and hopefully turn the season around. You know, Iowa State's 5-3. They're not 3-5. They have a chance to, you know, they've got four opportunities remaining. If they won them all, they'd have 9 wins, which had only been done once in school history before last season. So it's not like the season's a throwaway by any stretch of the imagination, and Iowa State still has plenty of opportunities here to get some things cleaned up and make it a great, great season, and I'm hopeful that's what they'll do.
Number 3.
Spoiler warning, part 1. The time for the big-time matchup between BYU and Texas Tech has been set for 11 a.m. Central Time on November 8th, and will either be on ABC or ESPN. But that game is not this weekend, as you might have noticed. Undefeated BYU will still be undefeated because they're not playing this week. But Texas Tech has a sneaky tough game this weekend against Kansas State, hence the spoiler warning. Wildcats have won 3 of their past 4 games. Their only loss was at Baylor by 1 point on a last-second field goal. ESPN's Bill Connolly has the Cats as one of the hotter teams in the country, according to a few of his computer metrics. Kansas State is technically still in the conference race at 3-2. They would make things a lot more interesting if they give the Red Raiders their second straight loss. I called Kansas State a potential spoiler team from a few weeks ago. Avery Johnson is a good QB, and their defense proved against Kansas that they can wreak havoc at times. Then again, maybe that's just a bad Kansas offensive line. Red Raiders are still good. I think they win this game, but I also thought they would win at Arizona State. Look how that turned out.
Number 2.
Spoiler warning part 2. I know you only play one game at a time, but you can't help but look down the schedule and see that Cincinnati, one of the undefeated teams in the Big 12, is scheduled to play fellow undefeated team BYU on November 22nd at Nippert Stadium. What a game that would be if both teams could be undefeated coming into that game. But the odds of that happening are slim. We've already talked about why that may not happen for BYU side of things. Texas Tech should be a beast in Lubbock against BYU, even though the Cougars will be coming off of a bye. As for the Bearcats, they get to experience Rice-Eccles Stadium at night as they take on the 24th-ranked Utes in Salt Lake City. This would not be an upset if the Utes win. In fact, I expect them to win. In their last 2 games at home, they've won 53-7 and 42-10. And they won one of those games with a backup quarterback. Then again, Bird Ficklin is not a secret anymore. The Bearcats have been explosive on offense, but it will be interesting to see how explosive they will be against a Utes team who is also technically still in the conference title race and is very physical. I think the physical nature will transfer over, and Utah comes out victorious in this game.
Number 1.
Who's at the top of the conference? Do you remember the Big 12 back in 2023? In their final year in the league, Texas won the conference title game over Oklahoma State. Newcomers Houston, BYU, and Cincinnati had a combined conference record of 5-22. This season, they are 14-1 in conference. All 3 have surprised this season, but Houston may be the biggest surprise. The red-clad Cougars have only lost to Texas Tech at home. They have not faced a murderer's row of other Big 12 teams, but
a win in Tempe last weekend was pretty impressive. Cougs QB Connor Wegman has passed for close to 1,600 yards and run for over another 354 yards and 8 touchdowns. He's only thrown 2 interceptions. Their defense has been solid. And this weekend, they have a very winnable home game against West Virginia. Then they play at UCF, home to TCU, and at Baylor. They may not be favored in all of those games, but they could win every one of them. I'm not sure they're one of the best teams in the conference, but I'm impressed with their no-nonsense approach to winning football games. Anyway, congrats to all three of those teams for being in the discussion for a conference title at this point of the season, when most people probably would have thought it was a 2-3 team race between Texas Tech, Utah, and either ASU or Iowa State.
The big story's top 5 quarterbacks.
Number 5, Cincinnati's Brendan Sorsby, 111 yards passing and 2 TDs. He also led the Bearcats with 85 yards rushing and another TD. He helped lead Cincy on a 12-play, 75-yard drive that pretty much sealed the game for the Bearcats against the Baylor Bears. Number 4, Kansas State's Avery Johnson had 231 yards passing and 2 TDs, added 2 TDs on the ground in their rivalry win over Kansas. Number 3, Utah backup QB Bird Ficklin, 140 yards passing and 2 TDs. How about this, 151 yards rushing and a TD. Number 2, Houston's Connor Wegman, 201 yards passing and a touchdown. He also ran for 111 yards and scored 2 more TDs against ASU. His last TD gave the Cougs a 24-0 lead. And number 1, BYU freshman Bear Bachmeyer, 307 yards passing and 2 TDs, 49 yards rushing and a TD. That rushing touchdown put the Cougars ahead for the first time in the game.
The big stories, big man on campus.
I wanted to say Bear Bachmeyer from BYU after the Cougars star running back LJ Martin went down with an injury. For a freshman QB to lead his team to a victory after that was impressive, but I'm going to give it to Texas Tech linebacker Jacob Rodriguez. He had 10 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, and also ripped a ball right out of Oklahoma State running back Ceci Vailahi's hands and ran it back for a touchdown. Truly amazing. By the way, Vailahi was standing up at the time and being stood up when he ripped it out, and then no one was able to catch Rodriguez as he ran into the end zone. This Thursday, check out an encore episode of the Big Stories podcast. It's from Season 1. It focuses on Iowa State and the legacy of Jack Trice. There's also a great story about the Cycloneers. Never heard of them? Check it out on this Thursday's podcast. Download and subscribe to the Big Stories podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Cleon Wall. The Big Stories Pod will return soon. Big Stories is a production of BYU Radio.